Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots. A weekly program that showcases the stories and radio productions from this and many other community stations across the country. My name is Skidmark Bob from Free Radio Santa Cruz 101 FM, freakradio.org, unlicensed community radio since 1995. This week, a tribute to Utah Phillips, folk singer, storyteller, railroad tramp. He died on May 23rd, 2008, of congestive heart failure in Nevada City, California.
A new dirt's falling on a new-made coffin. A new dirt's falling on a new-made coffin. Way over in that Union burying ground.
Born Bruce Duncan Phillips in 1935, he later adopted the name Utah from where he grew up. Son of labor organizers, Phillips was a lifelong member of the industrial workers of the world, the Wobblies.
Oh, the cop, he went wild over me, and he held his gun where everyone could see. He was breathing rather hard when he saw my union card. He went wild, simply wild over me.
As a teenager, he ran away from home and started living as a hobo, rode the rails, and wrote songs about his experiences. In 1956, he joined the Army and served in the Korean War, an experience he would later refer to as a turning point of his life.
Why do your warships sail on my waters? Why do your death bombs fall from my sky? Why do you burn my farm and my town down? I've got to know, friend, I've got to know why.
In 1968, he ran for the U.S. Senate on a Peace and Freedom Party ticket. Over the span of nearly four decades, Utah Phillips worked in what was referred to as the trade, performing tirelessly for audiences in large and small cities throughout the United States, Canada, and Europe. His songs were performed by Amy Lou Harris, Waylon Jennings, Joan Baez, and Arlo Guthrie. He earned a Grammy nomination for an album he recorded with Ani DiFranco and was awarded the Lifetime Achievement Award by the Folk Alliance. For the past 21 years, he's lived in Nevada City, where he started a nationally syndicated folk music radio show called Loafer's Glory. Produced at the community radio station KVMR, he also helped found the Hospitality House, Homeless Shelter, and the Peace and Justice Center. In January 2004, Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! Met with Utah for an interview that was broadcast live from the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Let's start out where you started out. Where were you born? When were you born?
I was born in Cleveland, Ohio in 1935.
And how did you start on this journey? When did you begin singing, storytelling?
Oh, Mercy, I think we're all storytellers. You know, you think of the excuses you told your parents for why you got home late. So I just never gave it up. I went up to work in Yellowstone National Park. During high school, I was going to make some summer money and went up on the freight trains. And it's the first time I rode the freight trains, and I worked on a road grading crew. And at that time, I was playing the ukulele and singing Ersatz Hawaiian music, Johnny Noble, things like that, Lovely Hula Hands, Malahini Mele. The other hands working on that crew, a lot of them were old alcoholics who could only shovel gravel. But they knew songs, and late at night, you know, there would be a fire, we would live in these clapboard shanties. They sang old songs, Jimmy Rogers, and they sang old Gene Autry songs, songs I'd never heard. But we're much closer to the way I was living right there at that time. Certainly a lot closer than the Ersatz Hawaiian music. So they showed me how to turn my ukulele chords into guitar chords and taught me those songs. And it's right about then I started making songs. In that mold, making songs of what I saw in the world, you know, around me, but using those tune models and those verse models that had endured for so long and will continue to endure simply because they work. So I've been making songs and stories for over 50 years now. It's a way of life. It's like breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Daddy, what's a train? Is it something I can ride? Does it carry lots of grown-up folks and little kids inside? Is it bigger than our house? Well, how can I explain when my little boy asked me, Daddy, what's a train? When I was just a boy, living by the track, us kids that gather up the coal in a big old gunny sack. Then we heard the warning sound as the train pulled into view. The engineer had smiled and waved as she went rolling through. She blew so loud and clear, we had to cover up our ears. And we counted cars just as high as we could go. I can almost hear the steam and the big old driver scream with a sound my little boy will never know. Daddy, what's a train? Is it something I can ride? Does it carry lots of grown-up folks and little kids inside? Is it bigger than our house? Well, how can I explain when my little boy asked me, Daddy, what's a train? I guess the times have changed. Kids are different now. Some don't even seem to know that milk comes from a cow. My little boy can tell the names of all the baseball stars. I remember how he memorized the names on railroad cars. The Wabash and the TP, Lackawanna and the IC. Yeah, the nickel plate, the good old Santa Fe. Just names out of the past, I guess they're fading fast. Every time I hear my little boy say, Daddy, what's a train? Is it something I can ride? Does it carry lots of grown-up folks and little kids inside? Is it bigger than our house? Well, how can I explain when my little boy asked me, Daddy, what's a train? We climbed into the car and drove down into town, right up to the depot house, but no one was around. We searched the yard together for something I could show, but I knew there hadn't been a train for a dozen years or so. All the things I did when I was just a kid, how far away those old memories appear. I guess it's plain to see they still mean a lot to me, 'cause my ambition was to be an engineer. Daddy, what's a train? Is it something I can ride? Does it carry lots of grown-up folks and little kids inside? Is it bigger than our house? Well, how can I explain when my little boy asked me, Daddy, what's a train?
I was, it was in Cleveland, Ohio, where I was born. My mother and father divorced when I was about five. My father was a communist, youth organizer, and he sold the Daily Worker on the streets. My mother had worked briefly for the CIO, Congress of Industrial Organizations. They're both radicals, but I think it was a tenant union strike, near as I can tell, asking questions. There was a lot that my mother would never talk about. I didn't know my father hardly at all. But they were, everybody was living in a tent. I have a brother older than me by a year, living in a tent in this tenant union strike. No future for two small children, two infants, you know. So my mother left him, and she became a fashion model. You know, what does a single woman do with two children? She was had been a beauty pageant winner in high school, and she became a fashion model for Higbee Brothers in Cleveland, walking the runway upstairs at the top in the lunchroom, you know, with the dressing room backstage. And that's where we, my brother and I, were kind of stashed. Oh, that was beautiful. I'm glad I've thought about this for years. My brother and I would sneak away, two little kids, and we get on the elevator and go all the way down to the basement of Terminal Towers, Higbee's, because that's where the big trains came in. That was the train station underground there. And the big steam locals, the passenger locals, would come in, and I'd go down to the head end where the engine was. I mean, the drivers used enormous engines. You couldn't, a grown person couldn't touch the top of those drivers. And just before they were going to start, the engineer yelled, "Board!" And then they'd vent steam, and I would become enveloped in this cloud of warm steam where I couldn't see anything around. It was like being in a fog bank. It was marvelous. Well, my stepfather, Sid Cohen, a young Jewish businessman. He just graduated from University of Pennsylvania, and the young guys would go have lunch at the roof of the Higbee brothers to watch the models. And so he fell in love with her and courted her off of the runway. And that was quite a commitment for the son of immigrant Jew, Simon Bialobzeski. Name was Cohen. Why? Because same old story, you know, I can't spell your name. What's your tribe? Cohen. So, you know, he said Cohen. For him to marry a Shiksa with two children just out of college and move us into the old Jewish neighborhood next door to his father, Simon. So there we were. You know, that's where I spent the first 12 years of my life. And it was a wonderful, wonderful. It was so full of juice, so full of life. It was people on the porches in the summer talking and playing Yiddish records. And a lot of them were still hand-cranked Victrolas. During the Second World War, when there was gas rationing, there were still horses in the street. The rag man, you know, the coal scuttle, the vegetable wagon. And they just never did give up the horses. You know, why bother? You're going to ration gasoline. And it was just an exciting place to grow up with Simon. Simon was Orthodox. My grandmother, Lily, wasn't. She was, no, I don't know quite what Lily was. She was younger than Simon. Simon would sit at the end of the hall. My first memories of him was he had cataracts. And the doctor said, he was getting cataracts, some eye problem. And the doctor said, if you sit at the end of the hall, and he gave him a prism, and you put something at the other end of the hall, in this case it was some dried flowers in a pot, and you hold that prism up to your eyes and practice bringing the images together, you won't have to have an eye operation. So every morning on rising, Simon is at the end of the hall, this tiny man, very old, with the prism focusing on those dried flowers. And while he was there, my mother would come across where Lily was, my grandmother, and together they would fry up bacon in the kitchen, and they would eat it quickly before Simon came in. And one of my first memories as a little kid, you know, 5-6 years old, was to come across from the house next door to wonder where my mother was and find in the dead of winter my grandmother Lily and my mother standing in the kitchen flapping their aprons to get the smoke out the windows. Place was freezing, you know, before Simon came in. Simon, my memories of Simon are in the living room of that house during the Second World War with his ear glued to the curtain on the front of the Atwater Kent, a big stand-up radio. All those old radios had a short wave band, and he's there, his ear right up against it. He was hard of hearing, and he was turning the dial, just trying to pick up any news about what was happening in Europe because his whole family was there, you know. And he sold home heating oil, and he spent most of the money he saved for retirement trying to get people out of Poland, and it didn't succeed at all. He didn't. When he retired, he had very little because he had given it up. But watching him, I didn't understand then what he was doing, but he was so fixed up. There was a terrible storm. Lightning came through the front room window, set the carpet on fire right at his feet, and he did not pull his ear away from that radio.
I switched on the radio and turned the dial. Thought I'd listen to some news for a while. I grabbed the knob and spun it around. Got NPR, here's what I found. Real news, hardly a trace, just one damn marathon marketplace. Dow's up, Nasdaq's in the cellar, and NPR sold out to Rockefeller. Yeah. Hostile takeover, real hostile. Well, I hear all about the antitrust and all the day traders who have bit the dust, mergers, buyouts, and acquisitions, low-down crooks in high positions, for wheelers, dealers, and CEOs fired and paid off through the nose, buying yachts and fancy homes like they did with the money from the savings and loans, and I get pissed. Oh, there it is. Well, dot-com this and dot-com that, and the underwriters are getting fat on airwaves stole from you and me by a bunch of thieves called the FCC. And they don't give a damn what we want or need. They've all caved into corporate greed and sold us out to the ruling class. But the whole damn bunch can dot my com. I got tired of being treated like a veg, so I called up the station and canceled my pledge. And in a mighty act of liberation, sent the money off to my community station. I said, I love you, but if you blow it, I'll sure as hell let you know it. I'll knock the radio off the shelf, buy a transmitter, and do it myself. Whitebeard the Pirate. This is radio station HOBO, broadcasting on a vagrancy of 60 to 90 days, signing off for now.
You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program produced by this and many other community stations across the country. This week, a tribute to you, Utah Phillips. We just heard Talkin' NPR Blues, live from a benefit concert at the Rio Theater for Free Radio Santa Cruz after the FCC raid of 2004. We also heard an interview from Free Radio Santa Cruz programmer John Malkin off The Great Leap Forward. Daddy What's a Train was off of Utah's first album, Good Though, going back to 1973, and we started out with an excerpt from an interview Utah did with Amy Goodman in the Free Radio Santa Cruz studios. You can watch the whole interview at democracynow.org. Up next, a track from the Fellow Workers release with Ani DeFranco, and I Will Not Obey. Stay tuned and keep it locked to Sprouts. Radio from the grassroots.
The new ruling party is holding the aces. The rest of the cards are all missing faces. I'm sorry I can't know you today. What can one say? I will not obey. Give us your sons and give us your daughters. No one is safe or immune from the slaughter. How indifference makes them rage. What can one say? I will not obey. National Guard or freedom fighters, all houses belong to cigarette lighters. But who hides in the smoke? What can one say? I will not obey. Better perhaps to perish outside of the bunkers where our generals hide. I turn away and spit. What can one say? I will not obey. Give us the minds of your children to learn the substance of books we have not yet burned. But can they read the sky for rain? What can one say? I will not obey. Soon all tyrants will feel our impatience. We choose to create our own combinations. I was always willing to agree. What can one say? I will not obey. The essence of contract is agreement, not coercion or obedience. And agreement is sacred. What can one say? I will not obey. There are so few wars of people's liberation, for the people have so seldom risen. Only the armed faction, listen, the armed faction lies. They recreate the state through their action. When the people rise, it is not they, but the state which dies. I sing this song for the prisoners' release, most of all now for the new state police. You see, the guns have changed hands again. What can one say? I will not obey.
Well, this is Utah here again, out here in Nevada City, California. Very spectacular sky here. It's really a spring day after a spring rain. Fluffy white clouds, scudding through a powder blue sky. The big trees, well, they're not anywhere near in leaf yet, but the hawthorns. The garden out in front, the tulips are up. It's really quite beautiful right now. They're very beautiful. Well, a little health update. I'm really getting used to this bag that I carry around. The one with the pump in it with the medicine that gets pumped into my heart continuously, 24 hours a day, through the catheter implanted in my chest. I'm getting used to carrying it around without snagging the hose, you know, the little tube on stuff on other people's furniture, which is really bothersome. It's getting a whole new set of habit patterns, like learning to ride a motorcycle. And then, of course, we're getting real regular with the oral medication that I take 9 times a day. And I seem to be improving. I have trouble catching my breath, like about now, for instance. I think I'm definitely making some progress here. Oh, I found out this week that I do have a hernia, which will have to be attended to, but there's a very good chance it'll be an outpatient procedure. You know, I just don't want to go back to that place again. And then we're dealing with a little scoliosis of the back, just a curvature of the spine, but I got a some volunteer physical therapists that are going to come over kind of rotationally and work on that. And, well, I really appreciate the community that I live in. It's a community full of helping hands. My son was down visiting, Brendan, from Olympia, and he brought down the old guitar. You know, I played that big Guild F50. It's a little harder for me to play now because I haven't played for months, and also my hands don't behave properly. But I can play that Gibson L00. It's 1935, built in my birth year. So he brought it back down to me, and I loaned it to him, and I've just finished an hour and a half playing the old songs, seeing how I could get along, and I got along pretty well. I love singing those songs. I got lists and lists of songs that I sing and used to sing, and just start at the top and go all the way through. A good day for me, you know. The past couple of days have been very, very slow, but this morning was a talk on a single payer health care, and you know, which I, of course, again raised the issue of socialized medicine, aka me, Medicare. Why not just lower the age limit to zero? Seems to work. And if they talk about going broke, well, hell, nobody's asking where the money is. They're just saying it's going broke. Like in the budget cuts here and across the board in California, nobody's asking the question, who's got the money? Where'd the money go? Well, we know where the money's going. We just got to get it back, that's all. And then this afternoon, we did the celebration of the life of Cesar Chavez over at the Unitarian Church, and Cesar's grandson was up here speaking to us, and he works with the Cesar Chavez Foundation now. And there was good music and good company, and people in the who came who had worked in the farm worker struggle and spoke about it. And then newly arrived Hispanic families. Now, Nevada County, the county I live in, it's a rural county here in California, but the Sierra is the most Anglo county in California, I don't know, maybe in the country. It is a lily white county, and which means, you know, you got to leave it periodically to hear other accents, see other complexions, get into the world. Well, now, we have an emerging population in western Nevada County where the population is centered, of about 2,000. I know the Catholic Church is doing the Spanish Masses now down in Grass Valley, and you know, the kids are using the basketball floors over there in their gym, their rec hall. And I touched base with a new organization I hadn't heard about, Colaborando El Español, linking our communities, and that is a support group that has started here to offer help, assistance, hospitality from people here to the incoming Hispanic community. And I'm going to go to their meeting here first Thursday of next month. Yeah, I am able to get out and about more and feel like I gotta feel more useful. You know, yeah, I know I've had business to take care of here to get used to all this medical stuff, but damn it, I just have to feel useful. So my goals are to be able to become active again in a much more limited way with our hospitality house, our homeless shelter, and then I want to work with these folks here in this emerging immigrant community. Well, that's about all that's going on around here for right now. I'm going to continue to work on the real light. I got some real lightweights. I'm at 3 to 5 pounders. I lost all my musculature, you know, over the past 4 months. So with the approval of, you know, all the appropriate people, I'm going to be doing some weightlifting, and very, very light to start with, and build my health up. I'm in training to go to try to get to the K-Wolf Festival here in June, because I really want to see some old friends. I know it'll be hard to travel with these medicines, and we'll need a cooler with dry ice in it, but I think we can manage it. Well, I'm looking forward optimistically. I'm going to just press on. So, thanks for letting me talk to you. And anybody wants to, I don't have email, but if you want to write me, you know, P.O. Box 1235, Nevada City, California, 95959. And I'd like to hear from you. Okay, so long.
These old songs, these old stories, why tell them? What do they mean? When I went to high school, that's about as far as I got, reading my U.S. history textbook. Well, I got the history of the ruling class. I got the history of the generals and the industrialists and the presidents who didn't get caught. How about you? I got the history of the people who own the wealth of the country, but none of the history of the people that created it, you know? So when I went out to get my first job, I went out armed with somebody else's class background. They never gave me any tools to understand or to begin to control the condition of my labor. And that was deliberate, wasn't it? Huh? They didn't want me to know this. That's why this stuff isn't taught in the history books. We're not supposed to know it. You understand that? No. If I wanted a true history of where I came from as a member of the working class, I had to go to my elders. Many of them, their best working years before pensions or Social Security, gave their whole lives to the mines, to the wheat harvest, to the logging camps, to the railroad. Got nothing for it. Just fetched up on the skids, living on short money, mostly drunk all the time. But they led those extraordinary lives that can never be lived again. And in the living of them, they gave me a history that is more profound, more beautiful, more powerful, more passionate, and ultimately more useful than the best damn history book I ever read. As I've said so often before, the long memory is the most radical idea in America.
Well, that's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to a special tribute to you, Utah Phillips, who died on May 23rd, 2008. We heard The Long Memory off of the Fellow Workers release with Ani DeFranco, and we also heard the last podcast report that Utah gave in March 2008. Listen to all the podcasts at utahphillips.org. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts and to showcase it nationally, please contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. For this week, I'm your producer and host, Skidmark Bob, from Free Radio Santa Cruz in Santa Cruz, California. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts. Radio from the grassroots.